Hibbard comes home. The pitch swung on and missed. The throw to second is in time. It's a strike him out, throw him out.
Kick it out left corner. DeAndre wide open for three. He hit it again.
Raider going deep over the middle. Caught. Rucker across midfield, and he's going to take it all the way to the house. 79 yards.
Welcome to the Second to None podcast, the A-State podcast, presented by First National Bank and Cavanaugh Auto Group. Now, here's Matt Stoltz and Brad Bobo.
Coming up, baseball with its best week of the season, track and field with a huge weekend in their home event. We'll recap PAC weekend, including the spring football game, which was held Saturday. Tennis was at the Sun Belt Conference tournament, but we're going to start today with men's golf. They were in Madison, Mississippi last week, competing at the Sun Belt Conference Championships. They were looking for a second straight Sun Belt Championship and came up just short. They fell in a playoff in the championship match with Coastal Carolina. Still an amazing season. Set a new team record for lowest stroke average while winning three tournaments. The biggest highlight last week was a Red Wolf golfer winning the individual champion honors. And it's the first time that's happened for an A-State golfer since 1997. The only other person to do it was David Thott. He did it in 94 and 97. The one that did it this past week, though, is in studio with us today. And we're thrilled to have him with us, senior from Hull, England. It's Jack Maxey. How you doing, Jack?
I'm doing all right. Thank you very much for having me.
Sunbelt men's champion, Jack Maxey. How does that sound?
Yeah, it's pretty good. Yeah, I wouldn't have necessarily expected it come the start of the week, but I'll definitely take it now.
Why not?
Well, I suppose in the last few years, I haven't necessarily shown as much form or as sort of good as golf as I've played maybe the last 2 weeks. But I kind of figured why not and went out there and got it done, I suppose.
You talk about ending your A-State career on a high note. Your first ever win was 2 weeks ago in the A-State Spring Invitational, and you followed that up with a win in the very next tournament, which happens to be the Sun Belt Conference Championship. So I'm guessing this is the best golf that you played in your career.
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, if there's ever a time to come good, I guess it's the time to do it. I would say that I would probably describe myself as a golfer who could always do a job in a team environment, who's always going to be, you know, someone that's going to post a decent score. But my record kind of suggests that maybe I'm not going to go out there and win. But then, you know, going 2 for 2, you know, is not maybe something I'm used to. But I don't know, I'm enjoying it right now.
So did anything in particular click? I mean, as far as your game's concerned, like what caused those back-to-back wins?
Yeah, it's interesting you say that. The only thing I can think of was I'd kind of came off the kind of the mid part of the spring season, you know, playing okay. Like we went across the Torrey Pines, fantastic golf course, lovely views, but just didn't bring my, you know, my best golf. And it's not really a place that you can get too upset. But I kind of came back from there thinking, you know, something kind of needs to change. But I kind of thought maybe I could do with a psychological switch. So I actually downloaded an audiobook. It's called The Inner Game of Tennis. I played a little bit of tennis when I was younger, but you know, I was never too great at it. It's basically just a general sports psychology book based around tennis. And it talks about, you know, how you talk to yourself during performance and how you kind of manage your expectations and manage your judgments. And, you know, whilst I was playing the Spring Invitational, I wasn't really sort of in the tournament necessarily. On the last day, I kind of got in the flow, as it were, got in the zone and shot 8 under 64 to win it from being 7 behind. And that's what the book is kind of about. It's about quieting down your mind and sort of just allowing you and your ability to take over, and that kind of, you know, all kind of fall into place at the right time.
All right. So how do you quiet down your mind?
It talks about kind of separating your mind into what's called self-1 and self-2. Your self-1 is like your judgments and your conscious mind. And your self-2 is your ability to perform a skill. So the idea is that you should quieten down your judgments and quieten down sort of grading in your mind how well you're performing, and let your self-2, your ability to perform that skill, kind of take over and kind of rule you almost. So it kind of falls into the fact that why some people might be able to perform a certain skill in practice, but when it comes down to it and when you're in a pressure situation, you kind of, you know, you get a bit tentative and a bit kind of amped up and don't necessarily perform that skill to the best of your ability. So it's all about quieting down your judgment and just letting yourself do it, letting yourself perform the skill that you know you can.
All right, I got two things. Number one, how in the world did you find the inner game of tennis?
I think it was just on social media. I think I kind of came across like it was almost not quite an advertisement, but it was kind of a way that it was talking about sports and about unlocking your potential, I think, in a very kind of way that was a little bit cheesy in a way. But I kind of, the things that it said in there, I kind of, oh, that's actually kind of quite a good idea. So I gave it a go, paid $12 and won twice.
Spent.
Best $12 ever spent.
And the other thing about the Spring Invitational, before we kind of dive into the conference tournament, is, and we were talking even before we recorded, I don't know how you get people to come play in these tournaments because you just beat them mercilessly. So you go to that last day and there's zero doubt from a team standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
So does it turn into like you're playing against your guys to just try to win the individual? Because we went 1-2-3 individually. Is that what it turns into?
I would say so. I mean, we're thinking, you know, conference is, you know, the next tournament coming up. You're kind of jostling for position, jostling for spots. And yeah, I mean, you know, I think from my point of view, being a senior, that's going to be my last tournament playing at Ridgepoint, playing at home, and you just kind of want to go out with a bang, really. And yeah, I mean, I got in that last round, I got off to a decent start and kind of started talking to myself, you know, why not? Why can't we just go out and finish this thing? And that was kind of what kept me going, really, on the back nine, at least.
That Spring Invitational is a new thing. You always have the home tournament mm-hmm. in the fall with the Bubba Barnett, but do you think that Spring Invitational helped you kind of give you some momentum going into
I would definitely say so. I think the idea behind the Spring Invitational, I believe, is that we wanted an event to play just before conference, the week before conference, so that we're kind of competitive and we're kind of, you know, in the groove and ready to go. And the building confidence side has definitely helped me. You're playing around your home golf course, so that always kind of helps you a little bit and, you know, helps the team going forwards, really.
So you go from that performance at home, both team-wise and individually, to a golf course you guys won on last year for a conference championship. So what was your confidence level headed down to Jackson?
Pretty high. I mean, it's a golf course we've played conference at the last two times. So, I mean, once you've played a practice round and played a tournament, you kind of know the ins and outs of the golf course, and then playing it twice the year after as well, you go there knowing what to expect, which helps me a lot. I think in my golf, you can kind of quieten your mind down if you... there's parts of the golf course or maybe there's a particular flag stick that you kind of start to doubt yourself whether there's a good place to miss or not. Whereas I feel definitely now that I kind of knew what to expect and there was never going to be any surprises on the golf course, which would have made me uncomfortable, or I knew what to expect, I think is what I'm trying to say. Like, there's no reason why I couldn't go out there and play well, and there's no reason why the team couldn't go out there and play well as well, having had our success the year before.
You had to do it in a playoff, third playoff hole against Louisiana's Eli Ortega. So let's go through the playoff, kind of your mindset going into that. I'm sure you're playing that inner game of tennis during all that. And look, Thomas Schmidt was in a similar position last year. He was in the playoff and fell short. So do you talk to him during this?
It was a bit of an unprecedented situation, really, because we'd come off the course. We were in the first few groups out around about 30 minutes after we'd finished, they blew the horn for lightning. So they brought everyone in, they stopped play. And it was about another 2 hours or so until play resumed. So obviously I'm sat there knowing I'm in a playoff, and then I had to sit there for about 3 hours waiting to go out there. So there's a lot of time obviously to sit down and think, and you know, think about all the things that can go wrong and think about, you know, oh, I'd love to win this championship. So yeah, I kind of just sat down, you know, with our teammates and kind of tried to think about not really golf for very long, and just try and sort of calm myself down, really, before I went out there.
After that point, you played an entire round and then sit that long. Is it like you have to warm up like it's an entirely different day? Could you go back out there and feel like you could get your swing the way it was in the round?
So when they resumed play, there was probably about five or six groups still out on the course, so I had enough time to go out there and warm up. We actually kind of started off a little bit light. We had everyone out on the putting green. I had a little sort of fun putting sort of comp across the greens, like doing stupid kind of things, just to kind of keep it lighthearted, really. The serious golf was going to come. We were just trying to keep it as fun and as enjoyable for as long as we could. Once we'd done that, I was able to go and, you know, hit some chip shots, hit some serious putts, and go warm up a little bit before we started.
All right, so what's the immediate reaction as soon as you went?
relief, I think. I mean, I had everyone sticking around to watch me, and I didn't really want, you know, everyone to be around for that long when we've got to go and play 36 holes the next day in the team championship to end up with me losing. As I say, there's a lot of time to think about what can go wrong and, you know, what would happen if I did win. I was just glad that I'd got it done, and I knew the golf that I could play, and I was just glad that I was able to sort of fulfill it.
All right, I want to talk, and I know we're about to pivot a little bit, but I do want to mention Thursday, the match play. You guys roll into the final, and you're playing five matches, and somebody's got to win three of them. Whoever does is the conference champ. Matches 1, 2, 4, and 5 are over, and they're split. It's 2-2. There's one match on the course, and the two young men in it, like, I'd say unfortunate that in a team event, like, literally, there's two dudes on the course that are about to decide the conference championship. Sitting in the lead, and I already shook my head when you mentioned the lightning delay on the individual day, because one hits with the last match on the course in 17 fairway. And after the resumption of play, Coastal Carolina is able to win the last two holes, and then the guy makes a bomb on the playoff, and they win the conference championship. What were you guys saying or doing with Chris Summerfield during the delay? To me, it's a terrible mental place to be in, because we talk about – you know, it's a cliche and how you don't ever want to be in a position where you go play not to lose. But literally, that was the situation. He's out there having to just sit on the notion that if he just ties a hole, it's over. And I think I'd rather be the guy behind two holes, because you know you've just got to go out. So what were you guys saying to Chris during the delay?
Yeah, it's obviously a very psychological place to be.
Yeah.
Because especially being in the lead, you feel like it's yours to lose since you're up with two holes to go. And I mean, I was actually sat in a cart with a rules official who was showing me this radar of this big cloud that was getting closer and closer and closer. And then all of a sudden, lightning strikes and precautions and stuff. They've got to pull everyone off the course. So I was kind of concerned with talking to Chris about anything but golf.
Yeah.
He doesn't need anyone telling him what situation he's in. You know, I might have been in a playoff the day before, but I'm playing for myself. It's not as if I've got my teammates that I'm playing for, my coaches, my program, you know, so on and so forth. I was kind of focused on trying to talk to him about anything other than golf, really. We were trying to, you know, I was talking to him about a bird that was sat over there in the lake. But yeah, it's a very tough position to be in, and then that's even without a delay.
And I mean, obviously, am I a homer? Yes. Coastal Carolina played good golf all week. Not to take a thing in the world away from them or the young man in that match. And I was like I said, he made a bomb to win the deal on the playoff hole. But I'll go to my grave thinking without that delay, they're tying number 17 and are winning the second straight conference championship. Because they had tied, what, 8 or 9 holes in a row leading up to that.
Yeah, I would probably agree with you. Without that delay, I think we win. But also, I think you've got to give Chris credit on the last two holes. On 15, he'd hit a little par three and he'd hit a shot to about 15 foot and he'd rolled it in there for two. Give it a little fist pump. We were all clapping. On the next hole, 16, he hits it just over the green. Doesn't hit the greatest of chips. Coastal Carolina in for 4. He rolls another putt in for 4. Gives it a fist pump, and you know he was doing his thing. He knew what to do. But yeah, that's just the way sport goes. Yep. You win as a team, and you lose it as a team. And we were on the right side of it last year, and unfortunately on the wrong side of it this year. But all credit to Coastal Carolina. If you're going to win it with a 30-foot putt on the first playoff hole.
Right.
Obviously for them, it must have been a brilliant moment.
All right. I do want you to be able to tell a little bit of your story here. We've been talking a lot of golf, but we mentioned at the top, Hole England. So tell us about growing up there and, you know, how big of a deal was golf in your family?
So Hull, I mean, for those that don't know, we're about 4.5 hours from London. London's in the southeast, and another notable city is Manchester in the northwest. I'm as far north as Manchester, but Manchester is on the west coast, and I'm on the east coast. So I'm in a kind of a corner of the country, really. It's not really kind of a place you go through. It's a kind of a place you end up, really, if you see what I'm saying. But yeah, I mean, I must have been one of those annoying kids growing up for my parents at the time. You know, I was trying to play every single sport possible, and they're trying to run me here, there, and everywhere.
Which is what?
I did a bit of swimming when I was younger. I played a bit of tennis. I played cricket. I played a bit of rugby when I was a little bit older, and also football.
You'd rattle off like 4 sports and hadn't said football yet.
Yeah. I'm obviously not American football. It's right. Not soccer, it's football. You know, I've got to get that in there. But yeah, I played a lot of that when I was younger, and golf as well. Golf was actually the first sport I played, or so my mom tells me anyway. I think I was one of these really strange kids that by the age of 2 could swing a golf club and could kick a football and stuff. And golf was the earliest sport I could go and get like sort of group lessons in and stuff. So golf kind of progressed from there, really.
Since you already dealt with it's not soccer, it's football, let's go and you want to go and cover it's not the British Open, it's the Open?
Oh, yeah, it's definitely the Open. 100%. No doubts about it.
We've been around Mike Hagan for a while now. We have seen how he operates and obviously does a fantastic job finding talent, and once they get here, developing talent. You're not the only Englishman on the team. You're one of three. You're not, obviously not the only European. You know, you throw in Thomas, there's four of you on the roster. So what is it that makes you want to come over to the United States and play here at Arkansas State?
In terms of college golf, just as a whole, to me, it's the best thing in the world. I mean, I come from a country that we don't really necessarily see the sun very often. So we can come over here and, you know, we can play with you, with your friends, and, you know, go to class in the morning, play golf in the afternoon, come home and do your homework. I mean, it's not a bad lifestyle to live, really. Yeah, I mean, in terms of Arkansas State, I did my freshman year at the NAIA level down in West Palm Beach at Kaiser. I had a decent year there, and Coach Hagan contacted me, saying, you know, do you want to come up and play? And I was sold, really. I mean, I didn't need much selling, I don't think. The sun's out, you're playing, you know, against some of the best players in the country at times, and it's the best thing in the world.
Hey, I want you to, before we kind of head down the stretch here, we get too far away from home, I want to ask us two ways. Number one, tell me, especially getting to here, getting to Jonesboro, what's a food you've picked up a fancy for that you hadn't had at home?
I would always say my go-to is Chipotle. It baffles me how Chipotle is not, like, caught on at home. I think it would do really well. I don't understand why. You could probably eat it every day and not get bored of it, or at least I could anyways.
And then the flip side is, what's the thing you get at home that you can't get here?
That's a good question. There's not too many things I miss. Probably be a very stereotypical answer, but, you know, fish and chips, obviously a staple of England. Not that I have that much. This is going to be very controversial, but I do like beans on toast. That's obviously, if you brought that to an American, they would, you know, not have a clue what's going on. But
yeah, you get a lot of funny looks.
Yeah, 100%. 100%.
You're getting ready for the next step now, and that's regionals. You find out Wednesday which regional you'll go to. Obviously, it's exciting, and I know you're going to be fired up wherever you go. But your approach, how are you getting ready now as an individual to go and play?
You know, you spend the whole season, you know, playing for the team and playing for other people, and all of a sudden now you're left playing for yourself. It's definitely a bit of a flip in mindset, but I think I approach it in the same way. You know, as I mentioned before, I feel like I know I have the ability. It's just about going out and doing it, and asking yourself why not, and telling yourself to sort of keep calm. And it's very easy, I think, sometimes when you go and play against quote-unquote better schools, better players, to kind of shy away and kind of, oh, I'm not as good as them. But why not give it a good go and, you know, see where you end up after three rounds. And if you don't quite make it, then you gave it your best shot.
And go ahead and tell them that your individual title is not the only championship you celebrated last week.
It's true. Yesterday, I had the joy of watching Liverpool clinch the Premier League title.
That's his side. He's a Liverpool man.
Big Liverpool fan. We were just discussing before on the way here. Like,
not far away from home, right?
I mean, not too far. About 2.5 hours or so. It's more just the team that my dad supported. So I kind of, it's kind of the old thing that if your family supports a team, you kind of grow up supporting the same team as well. And they just happen to be the best team in England at the current point in time. But yeah, I love following the football. I think it's definitely something that's growing over here a lot. And yeah, as far as I'm obviously slightly biased because I play golf, but I think it's the best sport to watch, really.
What's next for you after you get done with this?
I'm looking at doing, basically getting into coaching. I'm not convinced I really want to play professional golf. As a lot of people know, it's a lot of money and the uncertainties and stuff. And I know I want to work in sports. And I think that if you're talking sports industries, I think America is the best sporting industry out there. And if I've got the chance to work in that industry now, then why not?
So you want to stay here?
Yeah, that's the plan, yeah.
Well, let me ask you, though, because coaching can mean several different things. Mm-hmm. It can mean you want to coach like Coach Hagan coaches. It means mm-hmm. you want to work at a club and give lessons. What's coaching mean?
Yeah, collegiate level coaching. Yeah. So I'm looking at doing a graduate assistant position next year so I can get the experience of the coaching whilst doing my master's at the same time.
You're on a good path here, Jack.
Yeah, it's only sort of come about in the last year, but I think now I've actually set myself, you know, I know what I want to do, which is something that I don't think many people really my age necessarily know what they want to do, and I think I do, and I want to kind of, you know, pursue it. Thankfully, I've got the platform to do it.
We are absolutely thrilled that you came in today, congratulations again on the Sun Belt Individual Championship, and good luck coming up here in the next couple of weeks at Regionals.
Thanks very much. It's very kind.
First National Bank's roots run deep in Northeast Arkansas. We began a single Paragould branch with one idea: customers first. By focusing on the best products banking has to offer and valuing the highest level of service, we're now 23 branches across Arkansas and Tennessee. As First National Bank grows, our roots only get deeper, and the mission remains the same. You first, always. Learn more about our products and services at fnbank.net. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Red Wolves fans, this is Coach Destiny Rogers, and I'm asking you to help our student athletes by donating to the Impact Club. This is an organization that highlights our commitment to teamwork while raising awareness and support for our local community programs. Make a monthly commitment and get access to team letters, special gear, and exclusive access that you won't find anywhere else. Find out more and give today at impactclub.com. That's Impact spelled I-M-P-A-C-K-T club.com. Your support makes a real difference in the lives of our student athletes and in the future of our sports program. Wolves up.
Back on the Second to None podcast presented by First National Bank and by Kavanaugh Auto Group. You can check out Kavanaugh's entire selection of new and pre-owned vehicles at KavanaughCars.com. Enjoyed our visit with Jack Maxey there. And I do want to mention Thomas Schmidt. He's a guy that we talked to at this time last year, and he was a huge part of that Sun Belt Team Championship in 2024, and what a career he's had, number one. He's now sitting at the lowest career stroke average in program history and the lowest single-season stroke average in program history. And he most likely is going with Jack to wherever they're going in regionals.
Be great. Yeah, I mean, I know they'll watch from a team standpoint, the selection show. They're on the bubble, but probably maybe a little bit further out on the bubble. But, yeah, those two guys, either way, should have more golf to play.
All right, let's talk baseball.
Let's do it.
4-0 on the week, and it started Tuesday night at Memphis. That was a fun one. 8-6 over the Tigers. First time to sweep the season series against Memphis since 2016. Big night for Drake Anderson. He went 4-for-5 with a couple of doubles in that one. But anytime you're able to cross the river and beat those guys, it's a big deal.
Correct.
But it was a good tune-up for a very important series this past weekend at home against Georgia State. And Georgia State's a good team. We got to see it this weekend. When you look at the top of their order, they've got arguably the best hitter in the league and a guy by the name of Caleb Freeman, who's leading the nation in doubles, and he's way up there in the league in pretty much every offensive category.
That's on Friday night. Cross Jumper, you know, went into the weekend leading us in RBIs. He'd have been seventh in the Georgia State lineup in RBIs.
I noticed that.
So they do a bunch of hit and score a bunch of runs.
We went into that weekend one game behind Georgia State in the Sun Belt standings. We were tied for eighth place going into the weekend. Georgia State was tied for sixth. Mm-hmm. And Friday night was just one heck of a college baseball game. Had everything you could want. Timely hitting, really good pitching, and some big moments. The first two games of that series had as many pressure-packed moments as any two games we've had all year long. Friday night in particular, we got out of two bases-loaded jams, got a big double play to end another inning. Ashton Quiller made a diving catch with a tying run at third at one point. Big moment after big moment. We mentioned Ashton Quiller. He hit his first home run as a Red Wolf in that Friday night game. That was good to see. And then, look, we're up 6-2. Going into the eighth inning, and we bring in our guy. We bring in Chase Richter, who's been as good of a reliever as anyone in conference this year. I think he's one of the better relievers in the country with what he's been able to do. But he had one of his few rough innings all season long in the eighth inning on Friday. Georgia State's able to score twice to make it 6-4. So they're to within two going into the ninth. And Georgia State's got to be thinking, okay, well, Richter's back out there. We just hit him, and we've got our top three guys coming up, 1, 2, and 3 in the order. Chase is able to retire him 1, 2, 3. It was best on best, and Chase stepped up and really delivered.
Really a good game, a high drama, and we saw our first Kabuya bomb.
Is that what we're calling
that's
it?
That's what I'm like going
it.
With, yeah.
I like it. Yeah, Jeremiah Kabuyabon is a guy who really hadn't played much this year. And Mike Silva, when I interviewed him before the game on Friday, he said, look, I'm looking for some kind of offensive spark here. And I'll tell you, he was in the lineup before the game Tuesday night against Memphis, and he got sick. So he was a late scratch and didn't play. Well, tried it again on Friday, and, man, he did.
I heard Coach Silva in the post game Friday, and I'm going to believe him. But he said, I want to put him in there because I thought he'd go 1-for-4 with an extra base hit, drive in a run.
Couple of runs.
And so, yeah, he did.
Two-run homer.
He thought he'd hit a double, but instead he hit a 2-run homer. 1-for-4.
Really? That's what he wants. I mean, he told me the same thing. I think he's kind of in that same category as Jake Henry Williams. Those two have as much raw power as any two players on the team. That's what you're hoping, that they can drive in a couple of runs, get a big extra base hit at some point during the game. We'll get back to Jake Henry in a minute. Mm-hmm. After the game Friday night, there was some jawing toward the umpires. It was coming from the Georgia State side. And you don't see this very often, but there were actually two post-game ejections after the game Friday. Now, one of them was the reliever that went
four innings
that same night, Friday. He ended up getting a 3-game suspension. He wasn't going to pitch again anyway the rest of the weekend. The other person that got suspended was their leadoff man, Michael McGinnis. He had to miss the last two games, but rarely, if ever, do you see a post-game ejection.
Yeah, you don't see much, and they had a couple of them. And, you know, and it, kind of the thing that was the unfortunate part of all that is the way the game ended, and they were running hot anyway, and then the umpires have to go right basically through their dugout to get off the field. And that was unfortunate path the umpires had to take. And that's what led, you know, they were too easy of a target. They were sitting right there, and they were yelling at them anyway, and that led to a couple of ejections, as you said, and a couple of suspensions.
All right, so Friday night was fun. Saturday night was every bit as much fun.
Mm-hmm.
Another great game. And the Red Wolves did it in a different way this time. They were trailing going into the bottom of the sixth, and Jake Henry Williams able to crush a 2-run home run to tie it in the bottom of the sixth, tied it up at 4, and then Jake Henry again comes up in the bottom of the eighth inning. He told me in the post game, that was the best swing of my life. That was his quote. He drove it the other way, took it out of here to right center. And you really don't see Jake Henry go the other way too often. I thought he did make an incredible swing on that and drove it for a 2-run go-ahead home run, made it 6-4.
And not to skip ahead, but to get to tie this back to Jake Henry, you end up winning the game 6-5. Richter comes back, having pitched Friday night, comes back because it's a save situation on Saturday. They do score a run against him, got the tying run in scoring position. He gets out of it 6-5 with aim. Yeah, right.
Drake Anderson made a nice catch at the wall.
Yes, he did. But Jake Henry Williams, who ties it with a 2-run shot in the sixth, wins it with a 2-run shot in the eighth, comes up in his post-game interview and says, Chase Richter won us the game tonight. Make no mistake about it.
They're getting it right now. I mean, they're understanding what it takes to win, and they're seeing what their teammates are doing. And in these post-game interviews, these guys are really quick to deflect any credit their direction, and they're giving credit to their teammates. So they win 6-5 on Saturday. Sunday, nearly a 4-hour rain delay. We were supposed to start that finale at 1 o'clock. Didn't start until about 4:50. I guess the offense was ready to go once the game finally got started. Ended up scoring 8 times in the first 2 innings. Yep. Went on to win 13-4.
So real quick, thank you, Joe Slayton and the Slayton Family Foundation. Because, I mean, obviously, I mean, there's less than a 0% chance you get to play without the turf. Because it rained a bunch.
Yeah.
So it's the first time we've seen this year where you get, like, there's been times where, hey, it would have been too wet to play because of how much it rained last night. But it's the first time we've seen, let's wait out a rain and get started. So to see that immediate kind of dividend was cool. The field held up beautifully and drained great. There's a lot of credit to go around. This game, it did not have a curfew because Georgia State didn't fly up here. But it had a curfew. It was supposed to have a curfew on a start time. It was not supposed to be able to start past 4 o'clock. Georgia State, to their credit, it was a big game for them, too. They wanted to play. Obviously, A-State wanted to play. So Georgia State said, we'll stay as long as need to stay. The umpires, fortunately, none of them had flights to catch. They were all driving. They said, we're good for whenever. So it actually took getting okay from the Sun Belt to extend that out. They actually gave us to 11:59 Sunday night to get the game in. But a 4:50 start, and and then the ball was just flying all weekend long, but especially Sunday. I mean, Georgia State's four runs were four solo homers. Inkscough got the scoring started with a three-run homer in the first. I mean, I think there were 13 home runs hit in this series.
I can't remember a series at the time where we saw anything like that.
No, me either. And it was just like, all the conditions were right. I mean, the wind, it was warm, but the wind was blowing a little bit out of the north because of some of the weather that came through. And it wasn't all about the dimensions. There wasn't more than a couple of those that probably wouldn't have gotten out otherwise. But the ball was just jumping out of that ballpark like I've never seen it.
First conference sweep since the final series of the 2023 season. And with the sweep, the Red Wolves move from a tie for eighth to begin the weekend to a tie for fifth with nine games to go. This team that was picked dead last out of 14 teams in the Sun Belt is tied for fifth going into the final three conference weekends. Now, they do play their final midweek game of the season coming up Tuesday night at 6 against Little Rock. And then after that, it's nine conference games to finish up. And the next two weekends, they're taking on nationally ranked opponents, starting this weekend in Hattiesburg against a really good Southern Miss team. Friday at 6, Saturday at 2, Sunday at 1. But you know what? They've played nationally ranked teams very close already this year.
I mean, pitching and defense travel. Yeah, and this team has done both of those things in spades. You know, that Sunday win was six shutout innings from the bullpen, starting with Jelle Vanderlei, who came in and got it started. So they're playing with a lot of confidence at 22-21 right now. 22 wins with 10 games to go is already the most in the full season since 2019. 11 conference wins with nine to go is already the most conference wins since they won 11 of them in 2019. They've already eclipsed the win total and the conference win total for the last four full seasons.
Yeah, we're still three weekends to go.
So it's pretty remarkable what they got going on, and fun to watch.
Get huge savings now at every Cavanaugh dealership. Cavanaugh has a great selection of late model, low mileage, certified pre-owned cars, trucks, and SUVs. And most are still under factory warranty. We have every make and every model, so you're sure to find the vehicle you want. And when you buy at Cavanaugh, every new and used purchase comes with 1 year of free maintenance. Plus, we buy cars. Bring a vehicle, get a check. Come see us today at one of our dealerships or go to CavanaughCars.com.
This is Coach Butch Jones, and we need you to help our A-State athletic programs by donating to the Impact Club. This is an organization that is making a real difference in the lives of our student-athletes. Make a monthly commitment and get access to team newsletters, special gear, and exclusive access that you will not find anywhere else. Find out more and give today at ImpactClub.com. That's Impact spelled I-M-P-A-C-K-T Club.com. Your support is greatly appreciated and is helping our programs right now. Wolves up.
Back with you one more time here on the Second to None podcast, presented by Cavanaugh Auto Group and by First National Bank, where they put you first always. It was PAC weekend, and a lot that went into that. Now, one thing we didn't mention with the baseball, with PAC weekend, we had a lot of people on campus, and I think with the way the baseball team's playing anyway, we were going to get some bigger crowds, but we had the two biggest crowds of the season, Friday and Saturday, with over 1,100 at each one of those games, which was phenomenal.
So I was looking forward. I'd already decided after Saturday night, I was going to spend part of my day on Monday like digging through numbers to try to find, hey, this is the biggest three-game weekend, and who knows when. Now, Sunday sort
didn't
of
help with
yeah,
the
Sunday,
rain.
Sunday could have changed that because, I mean, a game starts 4 hours later than it's supposed to. But, yeah, Friday and Saturday were phenomenal.
Football ended up playing its spring game. They had their own scoring system, and the offense beat the defense 60-38. But there were some good things that came out of that, and I want you to talk about just the atmosphere itself and everything around the day out at Centennial Bank Stadium. But I do want to mention Corey Rucker was named the Larry Lacewell team MVP from last year. Big honor for Ruck. Happy for him. Jacob Bear was awarded with the Withrow Award, naming the team's best offensive lineman. And then the news that came out late on Saturday, and this was right after the NFL draft ended, three players signing as undrafted free agents: Courtney Jackson with the Broncos, Travion Thomas with the Panthers, and Jacob Bear. Jacob, we knew he'd be at least an undrafted free agent signee. Didn't know if he'd get drafted or not, but should be a really good fit with the Buffalo Bills.
I agree with that. I think that seems like a good fit.
A couple of rookie minicamp invites for Ryan Hiker, who was outstanding as our punter last year. He's going to the Colts. And Zach Wallace getting a chance in a rookie minicamp with the Falcons. But as far as Saturday, yeah, what were your
takeaways?
It was
a fun day. I mean, we keep, you know, every year we kind of add more layers to this thing. So this year we moved more stuff inside the stadium. You know, Orrin O'Neal was there, and he was awesome to talk with. We need to get him on here sometime pretty soon. But a lot of people loved catching up with him. Then women's basketball came over and signed, and people were over getting their pictures made with the waterfall behind them and standing with all the championship trophies won this year. But, you know, had a inside the stadium kid zone that had a mini golf course. Kids were able to come in and play putt-putt in the stadium Saturday. I saw a lot of kids enjoying that. So, and then obviously the field got full with folks coming down and getting autographs after the game. And you'll see a little football in there. Like I said, it's a different format, but I mean, that's just as it has been. And so, yeah, fun day. Appreciate everybody that came out. And next time we do it, it'll be for real against SEMO.
Another part of PAC weekend we haven't talked about: track and field. They hosted their alumni classic. Michelle Ogbemudia winning the women's hammer throw. Noah Isaiah winning the men's hammer. Jacob Pyatt taking the men's 1500. Cameron Bailey, the men's 200. Bradley Gelmert, the men's pole vault. Matthew Williams wins the long jump. Kiara Strayhorn taking the women's long jump. Izzy Danes winning the javelin. Jada Bugs winning the women's 200. Lizzie Winkler taking the women's steeplechase. And that was just Friday. Saturday, our winners were Menachem Chen, who took the shot put and the discus. Tyron Neighbors with the 100-meter hurdles. Colby Eddowes winning the men's 110-meter hurdles. Michelle Ogbemudia, again, she won the women's shot put. Zeke McCain with the men's 5,000 meters. Jada Bugs won the 400 meters. Renisha Andrews, the 100 meters. And Carly Pujol winning the women's pole vault. We promised there were other teams that competed at the Alumni Classic.
They were just going up against our alumni. That wasn't why it's called that.
The A-State track and field teams now getting ready for the Sun Belt Outdoor Championships, which begin May 8th, next week in Harrisonburg, Virginia. One other thing we want to mention here: tennis finishing their season at the Sun Belt Championships in Rome, Georgia. Great to see them get a win in the first round, able to defeat Georgia State last Thursday, 4-1.
You know, team they had just lost to just a week or so before that, and go down to the tournament and beat them.
Yeah, and then they had to take on the top seed, Old Dominion, in the quarterfinal round, and lost that one, but still, and we talk about it all the time with this tennis team, Sujay Lama and just the turnaround that he's had in such a short period of time. 13 wins for this team. It's the most for this tennis program since 2008.
Yeah, they've got some pretty remarkable stuff going on. And, you know, I think even that, talking with Amy Holt earlier today, you know, even that Old Dominion match was closer than you'd think, because the doubles point was kind of down to the wire. And, you know, this team with 13 wins, they were 12-1. A-State was, we're 12-1 when we got the doubles point. You know, that was right down to the wire, and Old Dominion got it. But, yeah, gave them a good match. Yeah, I mean, the trajectory for that program is just maybe not straight up, but it's really tilted up right now. It's cool to watch what they got going.
All right, anything else we need to mention here?
No, headed down the stretch. I mean, our last three home events next weekend, you know, big baseball weekend with Troy coming in here. So make your plans now. Like, if you're listening and you're not around in Northeast Arkansas, make your plans now to kind of maybe hopefully get up here some next weekend and see baseball if you haven't seen them. See Slayton Family Field if you haven't seen it. It's a fun product and cool to be going into the month of May and playing baseball games that matter a whole lot.
They really do. Those crowds really add to that atmosphere, and you can tell the players feed off it as well. So hope to see you out there next weekend. In the meantime, I do want to thank Jack Maxey for coming in and enjoyed our visit with the Sunbelt individual men's golf champ. Thanks to our buddy Mark Taylor for setting that up for us and bringing him in today. For Brad, I'm Matt. Have a great week, everybody.